So John White here with Luke 10, and I'm with Sarah Harrington, and we're going to do another of these interviews. Sarah is one of our listed facilitators in Luke 10. So I'm going to have asked Sarah to kind of tell about her journey with training. So Sarah, why don't you start out and share with us a little bit about where are you and your family? Just a little bit of background that would be help people to get to know you.
Sure. Yes, my name is Sarah Harrington. I'm in Stevensville, Montana, which is just a small town just south of Missoula, Montana, western side of Montana. And my husband, Tucker, is a builder. We have four children, two girls and two boys, ages almost 24, 22, 18, and 16. The girls are the older and the boys are the younger. And yeah, I've homeschooled them through their growing up. And yeah, that's about us in a nutshell.
Very good. Now, a lot of people in Luke 10, not everyone, but a lot of people are in the context of a house church, sort of, autonomous small group meeting out there. But you're not. You and Tucker are part of, what would you like to call it? A traditional church, institutional church? What's the best language for the church that you're part of?
There's a lot of things about it that's not traditional, but I think for the most part, it is a traditional model.
Okay. And so you meet, talk about it. You meet in a building. What size is it? Anything you'd tell us about the church that you're part of?
Yes, we do meet in a building, and there is a pastor that does most of the preaching Sunday mornings. It's difficult to tell how many people attend because of online audiences, but we have two services on Sunday mornings. I would estimate maybe 400 to 500 people between the two services each
Okay.
Sunday.
It's a pretty good sized church. And how long have you guys been part of that church?
In July, it will be 8 years.
Okay. And at some point, I understand you've been very involved, and at some point they ask you to take on a role with the small groups in your church. Do you have like a title? And tell us about what that's involved. What do you do, and what do they call you?
Oh, what do they call me? That's a good question. I
You,
thought that was
Sarah.
on the website. The small groups overseer.
Okay.
Yeah, it started out because I was asked to join the board, and in that process of kind of the interview process, I was just sharing, how I do have some obstacles, with the big church model, and my heart is for small church or small groups. And so kind of through that process, they were like, well, it doesn't have to be an either or, you can still be on the board and you can help with the small groups. So that's when I kind of came on as an assistant. But through the process, I just was doing more and more of the work there, and it was taking root. And eventually they just asked me to take over overseeing it altogether.
Okay. Is that a volunteer position, paid position?
No, it's volunteer.
Volunteer. And how many groups do you oversee?
Another good question. You didn't have these on the list.
Sorry. Just guess. What's a rough
Yes,
estimate?
active groups, because sometimes, leaders need to take a break and they archive their groups and then they come back and then we train new people and some new groups launch. I would say we have about seven active groups right now.
Okay, very good. So we'll kind of keep that in mind as we talk about your involvement in Luke 10. So at some point, and you can tell us how long ago it was, you found Luke 10. How did that come about?
Yes, it was in 2020. I was going through a design discovery course by Tim Morris.
Oh, yeah.
And through that process, just very strong community building parts of my design, were very evident. And at one point, I think I was expressing frustration around, how do you actually like implement this? And at one point I asked Tim, I said, do you know like anywhere I can go to learn more about like developing this part of my design? And he recommended Luke 10. And so as soon as we got off the call, I Googled it, saw your website, and I think on the main page there was, the Joy Fueled book. So I went straight to Amazon Kindle, downloaded it. I think I read it in like three sittings, and then I read it to my husband. And we're like, yeah, we're really resonating with this. And so we signed up for an intro call. And it seemed like it took a while to kind of get through that whole process and actually get on an intro call. But I feel like we were all in before we even did the intro call.
Mm-hmm. You were all in before.
Yeah.
You
so that's.
Yeah. What was it about Luke 10, the website, the Joy Fuel book? What was it that was drawing you in that direction?
You know, I mean, some of it was just, we had overseen small groups in the past and just come up against so many obstacles for fostering real heart-to-heart connection. And we were seeing over and over again that small groups were just turning into, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Church kind of thing, where people would show up and they'd expect the small group leader to teach a lesson, to shepherd everybody, to, you know, make the snacks and plan an outreach project, you know, all of that. And as much as we tried to make it more mutual, it just, nothing seemed to work. So there was a certain amount of like, we've tried everything else. Like there's got, you know, we might as well try this. But definitely just the elements of being joy fueled and Jesus led were really fascinating to us. And we had just previously read the book by John Eldridge, Waking the Dead,
yes,
which had just started making us aware of like the fact that Jesus can speak in our hearts, and our hearts, when we've been redeemed by the cross, our hearts are no longer totally wicked and, you know, beyond understanding, but he's redeemed us. And so that was like, that made a big difference, you know, for us too, reading that book even before we found Luke 10.
Yeah, that's a great book. Highly recommended. He talks about intimate allies and what does that mean, and how do we do that? So go through an intro call, and then you're in Church 101, 6 weeks. Do you remember who your facilitator was?
Yep, it was Jen Hamilton in Australia.
Okay, yeah, Jen, fantastic. What was it about that 6 week experience? What was that experience like for you and Tucker?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember at the beginning, even though, you know, at the beginning of the lessons, you guys teach us about read until, you know, it's a different learning style. You read until the Holy Spirit stops you and you pay attention and listen before you move on. And I remember being like super fascinated by that, but at the same time, really aware of my tendency to like check the boxes and like get through my homework before, you know, our next meeting. So I think I kind of tried to do both. Like I still wanted to get through everything, but I did want to like pay attention to that read until learning style. So that was different, but yeah, just showing up on the call and practicing with people, really bonding with the people over the call and being really ministered to by Jen and just her reflective listening. She's a very good reflective listener, that makes you feel seen and heard and understood. All of that really played into making it a very impactful experience.
I have a feeling you did really well in school. I won't embarrass you.
So, like you said, mom was a teacher.
A whole different learning style, as opposed to trying to, you know, try to master all this content, versus just read until Jesus stops you. Stop there. Don't keep reading. And then ask him, what is it that he wants you to know about that passage? So it becomes a relational experience and not just sort of an intellectual experience. So I'm glad you pointed that out. So at the end of Church 101, we invite you to take the next step, which is a leader team. Talk about that. Sort of what is a leader team, and what motivated you guys to take that next step?
Yes, the leader team is a community of practice where you get together with a group of people, the same group of people, a small group, every other week, and practice the skills you learned in Church 101 and also additional skills. For us, it took a little while to get plugged in to a group, just scheduling and leaders who were available to begin leader teams. I can't remember exactly how long it took, but I want to say maybe like 6 months between finishing Church 101 and actually getting plugged in. But I was a little bit skeptical at first, I don't know if skeptical is the word, but maybe just, I just felt kind of cautious that, you know, what if I feel let down again, you know, by another small group, or, you know, we show up and people want something from us, you know, because that had been a lot of our church experience. And I remember just walking and talking with the Lord, which I do a lot. And I just was telling him, you know, how I was worried about that happening. And I just heard him say, just test the fruit. You know, it's okay to just try it. And if there is fruit of the Spirit, you know, joy and love and peace and all of those things, then, you know, pay attention to that. And then if there's not, then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And so that brought me a lot of reassurance. And so when we did start it, and the fruit was good, you know, we did experience all of those things in our leader team.
Have you been in the same leader team since then, or have you been in different ones, or what's that been like?
So we were in the same leader team for, gosh, I want to say 2.5 years, and then different members had different things going on. And so it kind of dissolved about the same time that I started my leader team training. So I pretty much transitioned into facilitating a leader team after that.
So 2.5 years or so in a leader team, where somebody else was facilitating that. It did meet your expectations. There was good fruit there that you guys saw, and that made it really worthwhile. Sounds like. Okay. Then you decided to take the next step. So these are the different stages of training in Luke 10. And the next stage, I always think of as maybe our most important training that we do. So we call it listed facilitator training. What motivated you? How did God motivate you to take that step? And then what was that training like?
Yes. My main motivation was because of my church and the role that I was in bringing the Luke 10 rhythms to our small groups. I just came to the realization that, you know, I need training. I can't give to these people what I don't have. And, you know, all the good intentions are good, and what I had learned so far was good, but I needed more. So that was my main motivation for pursuing the facilitator training. I can't remember what the second part of your question was.
Well, my guess is that you have led small groups forever, for a long time. What's different? What did you learn in facilitator training that was kind of different or helpful or unique in terms of that experience?
Well, just the word facilitator, the role of facilitator is so different from all of my small group experiences, like I had shared before, where a leader, you know, prepares the lesson, leads the prayer, a leader ends up doing most of the talking. But a facilitator is someone who draws the voices of each person in the group out. And that was a big shift for me, but it was also a very welcome shift because I feel like I'm a lot better at that than monologuing. So, yeah, I just absolutely love that idea of making space for the other voices in the group.
And I find it to be really a lot less draining. If it's all on my shoulders as the leader, that can be pretty exhausting over time. But if my job is to draw people out and help them to interact, somehow that's almost energizing as opposed to draining. I expect you've experienced something like that.
Yes, yes, definitely. And you get to experience so much more than just what one person is bringing. You get to experience what everyone is bringing.
Absolutely. So let's go on to trainer training. And then I want to come back and ask you about how have you sort of integrated this into your church leadership. So facilitator training. So you finished that. And we say that when somebody has finished all the stages of facilitator training, that then they're listed. So we put them on a list as sort of, you know, Luke 10 gives you the stamp of approval or something, puts you on the website and all of that. And then there was an opportunity to take the next step, which is to become a Luke 10 trainer. So talk about that. How did you decide to take that step, and what has that training been like?
Yeah, I think it was kind of two reasons. I mean, number one, I I love to learn, and I like to try the next thing, and I like to be challenged. And so becoming a trainer was the next step in that process. But also because of practical reasons, again, with my local context, I knew that I couldn't do everything myself. You know, I couldn't facilitate like an intro meeting with each new person who was interested in starting a group, or even if they were just looking for a group. And I couldn't do all of the small group leader training by myself and facilitate. We have a leader gathering once a month that keeps getting bigger. So if we need to, you know, divide so that we can keep a small group feel, I can't be in two places at once. So it was this awareness that I need to be able to train other people. So going through the Loop 10 training process to learn how to do that so that I can do that in my local context was a big reason for that.
Really, really multiplying yourself, multiplying leaders so that you're not doing all of that yourself. Okay. You're an educator. You've do homeschool. I'm sure you've trained lots of people, and been in lots of educational situations or training situations. What did you find that was helpful or significant in the way that facilitators are trained or trainers are trained? What's the process like in Loop 10 for training?
Yeah, it's a blend of left and right brain experiences. So there is material that you go through, you read, you listen, you study. But there's also that relational aspect that you mentioned with, you know, stopping and listening to the Holy Spirit. There's showing up in a group and practicing together. And there's the really big piece, you know, of listening to Jesus. And because no, but there's times where nobody knows what to do, or, you know, we still, even if we have some ideas, you know, we still want to know what Jesus would do in any given situation. So definitely implementing that, the listening to Jesus piece, into all of learning, was a big deal for me.
Yep. Sometimes we call it experiential learning. So it's not just here's some concepts, but it's here's some concepts. Go practice those concepts. Let's debrief that together. You know, what went well? What are things that you can grow in? And then let's go do it again. So I think that's, to me, I've often said I would trade my whole seminary experience for this kind of training. I think it's so much more practical. So talk a little bit about then. And by the way, I'm so excited that you're becoming a trainer. I think you're going to be fabulous at that. And I think a lot of people will benefit from that. But talk about, how are you integrating this into your church? What does that look like?
It mostly started with my CO2, you know, my CO2 with my husband when we went through Church 101, and just experiencing that and bringing it to our family and talking about it to other people. And that's kind of how it began and how it started to spread. And just the impact that we were receiving from the rhythms of attention, and knowing I wanted to bring this to our small groups. And I also wanted to help the small group leaders facilitate instead of lead, you know, to make space for all the voices in their group. So it was kind of just a gradual process. When I first started, I hadn't gone through my facilitator training, so it was pretty messy. And at that point, the organic part of the portal wasn't open yet. So, you know, I was emailing videos and documents to the leaders. So definitely the leaders that I've trained since have gotten a much better experience than the first ones did. But yeah, just taking them through that Church 101 training for themselves. And then we have a monthly gathering during the first service at the church on the first Sunday. We gather and we check in and share appreciation stories, listen to Jesus together, listen to each other if there's something that came up that they want to share with each other. So yeah, that's kind of where that is now.
So that's so exciting. Let's see how to ask the question. So what kind of response have you gotten from the staff of the church, pastoral staff? What do they think about all of this stuff? And do you have a sense of some of these things sort of spilling out into the church as a whole?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are elements that I've seen take hold. In the staff meetings, they check in and listen to Jesus together. One of the pastors has been through Church 101 and was on our leader team with us. And there are, let's see, two other staff members that went through the Church 101 training. And they also have a young moms small group. So they've been implementing some of those things into their moms group. My pastors have read the Relational Revolution, and we were able to discuss that. Actually, my senior pastor read it twice, and definitely resonated with parts of it. But you know, there also is still some difference of ideas about church structure, and change is slow to take place in different ways too. So a lot of change is taking place, and not quite sure where exactly Jesus has taken us. Just try to do one step at a time.
It church of 400 or 500 doesn't change quickly. That's like turning a big ship around. And you sort of addressed this, but any other particular unique challenges that you find sort of implementing this in the context of a more traditional church?
Yeah, I would say the most challenging thing was when I came on to help, there were already several groups up and going, and they were, I mean, healthy in their own way because they had found their own way and they were bonded. You know, all the people in their groups were bonded. So coming in, you know, to me, I would like everything neat and tidy where everybody does the same thing in each group. And that just wasn't, I mean, they're all different. And like I said, some of them were already established, and all of the leaders were very receptive to what I was bringing. I contribute that, I think, to actually being a woman, I think helped me in that role, that I didn't come in an authoritarian way, like, oh, we're going to do everything this way, but just presenting some things. And because we practiced them together, they got to experience, oh yeah, this is really good, you know? And so it was pretty gentle bringing it to the groups. But like I said, at the same time, a lot of them were already established in their way of doing things. So kind of giving them space to still be who they were, even though that meant they're not doing things by the book, you know, as you might say. So I'd say that would be the biggest challenge, is just coming alongside of them and letting them be who they are and where they are, but still kind of, you know, bringing these practices and being consistent with practicing them.
Right. So you're kind of answering this, but let me ask the question anyway. If somebody else is in a traditional church and wanting to implement some of these things, any other advice or counsel that you would give them? You've been doing this for about 4 years in your church. Anything else that you've learned, or that you would, any advice that you would give to someone else seeking to do this in the context of a traditional church? Now that you're the expert, right?
I wish. I guess I would really recommend, you know, praying the 10 to be prayerful partners, you know, for like-minded people who will come alongside you and help you, because it's super hard to do it all by yourself.
Yes.
And along with that would be just the listening to Jesus element, you know, especially if you have other people who will listen with you to give you wisdom, for the Lord to give you wisdom about how to meet those people that are right in front of you, that are all individuals. You know, like I said, every group is different. There's not a cookie cutter approach, but Jesus is the one who knows how to shepherd them best. So if you have some of those people that you can listen with, then that would definitely be the best place to start.
That's great advice. I mean, Jesus said that he would build the church and not us. So he said, I'll build my church. So it's not, I always say, it's not my church and I'm not the one who's building it. And that changes everything. If we can really get a hold of that idea, and that our job is to listen to Jesus and see what he's doing and see how he wants us to join us in that. That's the key. Those are great answers. Okay, last question. Thank you so much for doing this. This is just great. If you were talking to somebody about Luke 10 who didn't know anything about it, and they're just coming to you to say, "What, you know, why should I consider this?" Or what would you like to say to that person about your Luke 10 experience?
Well, I guess I would again just start with kind of the CO2, you know, with my husband, which is where it started for us, and the practice of listening to Jesus and what a difference that has made in my life, you know, learning to listen to Jesus and the Emmanuel journaling, the appreciation stories. And if that's resonating with the person, you know, I think you can kind of pick that up pretty quickly. And if it's not, then, you know, maybe Luke 10's not for them. But if learning more about how to build community or have a relationship, you know, kind of around those ideas of heart to heart connection and listening to Jesus, then Luke 10 would definitely be a place to start, you know, learning about that and experiencing that. I mean, I don't think a 5 to 6 week course is that much of an investment, you know, for the benefits, you know, the fruit that comes from that.
It's worth an experiment for that period of time. Fantastic. Anything else that you would like to say to the people that are listening to this little podcast? Anything else come to mind?
I just want to say thank you. I mean, I just feel so much gratitude for you and everyone who has made the portal and just brought all the material together, everyone who's facilitated, just compiling and simplifying some really big concepts into really practical steps that I'm just astounded at the simplicity of a lot of the things. And like I said, I mean, it's even the appreciation story template, there's a template that you can follow. I mean, just that itself, the incredible brain skills and the connection to Jesus that comes about from things like that it's just amazing to me. So I'm just so thankful. So that's the main thing I want to say is just thank you to you and everyone who's worked really, really hard, joyfully,
yes,
to make it happen.
Well, thank you, Sarah. And likewise, I feel so, I feel that we're so honored to have people like you who are in a place of leadership in your church, yes, and also in Luke 10, people who you will train. I think will receive incredible stuff. So thank you for your investment in Luke 10 as well. So, okay, that's enough questions for now. You've done really great. Thank you so much.